welcome to the Big Web Show, everything web that matters. I am your host, G-Fry Zeldmane, and my guest today is Mr. Craig Hockenberry of Icon Factory fame. You know and love him as Shockenberry on the Twitters, and he is the author most recently. He's a software developer with Icon Factory, par excellence, going back like 20 years. And he is the author of a book of parts, fabulous, Making Sense of Color Management. It's Making Sense of Color Management, the new a book apart brief number 4 by Craig Hockenberry with a foreword by John Gruber. Craig, hi.
How you doing, Jeffrey?
I'm good. How's California today?
Good. It's sunny and warm. We had a little bit of rain, but you know, compared to what's going on in the rest of the company or country, I'm very happy.
Oh, come on, let's call it a company. It's becoming less of a country and more of a company every
day. Well, that's going to veer from the web topics a bit if we get into that. But yeah, I wouldn't argue with that too much.
You're in the OC. You're in the blue dot in the red OC, I believe. Right? You're in Laguna Beach.
Yeah. Although there was a little bit of a swing towards the Democratic side in our most recent election, so there's more of us left-leaning types in Orange County now than there used to be,
I try to convince myself that everyone's telling the truth. I try to listen with an open mind to everyone. It's hard sometimes, but I still do that.
Yeah. No, you have to. You have to.
My 12-year-old thinks I'm a sucker, though.
Why is that?
Because I believe most people are good in telling the truth.
I would agree with her.
You'd agree with her that I'm a sucker?
No. That most people are trying to...
That's what I say.
Oh, that's what you're saying. Oh,
I believe most people are good and are telling the truth.
Okay. Gotcha.
I think people are good, don't you?
Yeah, that we want to do the right thing. It's the problem with the web a lot of times is that people will say things without really thinking them through.
Right? It does magnify our sometimes thoughtless, not necessarily intentional cruelty, right? Like if I think of the times that I've hurt people, hopefully not too many times, but it's almost never been from a desire to hurt them. It's almost always been because I was just being thoughtless.
Right. You don't count to 10 before replying to the email.
Not even that. Just coming. So 30 years ago, I was in advertising. This is going to tie into Making Sense of Color Management. I had a partner, Jerry, and we had to come up with an ad for a Minolta colorimeter. Do you know what those were?
Yes. Yeah.
So they measured color accurately, which is the kind of thing.
Calibration device.
Yeah, calibration device, which is one of the topics that keeps coming up in color management, and which is one of the things that's so baffling on the web, because we believe in standards, all 700 of them. It's basically the problem. But we came up with this ad. I mean, I would never do this now. Back then, we were trying to be clever and edgy. And so we came up with this ad that said, discriminate on the basis of color.
Ooh.
Now, right?
Oh, man.
So now the sheltered mindset.
That's edgy.
But now the sheltered mindset is, we're assuming no one's racist, that people are ashamed of racism, that racism is long past, and that people of goodwill are reading this and going, oh, what a shocking thing to say. Oh, but you meant it a different way. How clever. And we actually presented that to a client.
And what was the look on their face when you did?
Well, they hated us. This client hated me. I never could figure out why, but that client really was not thrilled with Jerry and me.
That's one of those inside jokes that as soon as you tell it outside, it's like, oh, that's really not that funny.
It's not funny at all. At the time, we honestly thought we were being clever, because from our weird, privileged mindset, where everything was solved, and it's completely unreal. Jerry and I were both white, is basically what I'm saying.
That's that's one of the things that happens a lot on the internet, right? Is right, you assume that everybody's got kind of the same mindset that you have, right?
Right, and you know,
your pal Jerry, when you both kind of got that joke, but then along comes somebody who doesn't have that same mindset, and then you got some problems.
Now you've been doing
empathy is the root of it all, right? It's like there's a struggle to empathize with the person who's on the other end of the wire.
Well, I think just waking up out of your delusion that everybody's the same. I mean, I remember reading books and being irritated when they would call attention to the fact that a character was black. Like, so you're assuming that everyone else was white by default? Like, but they were. You know, and they could be a very well-meaning author, but it just seemed, in hindsight, it seems incredibly, I mean, not in hindsight. If you were black reading the book, it wasn't in hindsight. But to like a well-meaning, dopey white person, in hindsight, you'd look back at it and go, yeah, I mean, if it bothered me, imagine how much it would bother someone who wasn't even white. But yeah, mm-hmm. that assumption, that default assumption. Or do you remember this joke when we were like kids? A doctor was in an accident with and the kid was critically injured, the passenger, and the doctor, the driver was killed, but the son was critically injured, so they rushed the kid to the hospital, but the doctor said, "I can't operate on this patient. He's my son. How is this possible?" Do you remember this joke?
No, I don't.
It wasn't really a joke. It was like a challenge.
Like a riddle, kind of?
Yeah, and basically it was like, because the doctor's a woman, bet you didn't think about that. It was
right,
challenge your unconscious sexism thing. Like, well-meaning, but kind of super dumb. Like, I've got to believe half the people who heard that joke were like, heard that riddle were like, okay, so it's probably a woman, right? I mean,
yeah.
When are we going to get to the brain teaser part? Because, but anyway, web colors, mobile apps, desktop apps. We're talking about color. This is all me getting sidetracked about color.
You're talking about what happened 20 years ago and your ad agency, right? It's like I remember when 20 years ago, having color on your web browser was kind of a cool thing, right? Just being able to see 256 colors, right? Now that,
good save.
No, seriously. I mean, that's the thing that I kind of came back to in writing all of this stuff is like, think about where we've been and how far we've come. It's
amazing.
Pretty amazing. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's, in fact, early on writing the book, I started talking about the web safe color palette and Tina Lee was like,
"What's that?
Is this really important? What's it mean?" And it's like, to us old timers, like, what web safe color palette was super important.
It leaped out to me too as I wonder if anyone not around our age will even know what that means.
Yeah. Yeah. Even your mobile phone, right, has got like, millions of colors on the screen and they all look great.
Remember that's the thing, but we did, because of those limitations, we were actually much more conscious about color. I can remember really thinking about it and using it in a way that, the same way we were smarter about type for a while. Yeah. And then we went into sort of as we got more spoiled with type, as type became anti-aliased. We started making dumber mistakes.
I'm right now, your listeners can't see this, obviously, but I'm looking at, on Skype here, I'm looking at your pixelated blue beanie icon, right? And that's a limited number of colors, and it's an iconic image, and iconic in more than one sense, too.
Have you seen the new one? Justin Dower did a new one for me, which I've been using on Twitter. He was a pseudo room back in the day when you were, Icon Factory's pseudo room.
I thought that name sounded familiar. Yeah.
They put, and also here's an example of somebody who's in their 30s, but remembers the web safe color palette. Cause there are a lot of people who started as kids or really young teenagers.
Well, and that's, the whole point, you know, in fact, one of the reasons that this book got started is just as I realized that I didn't know what was going on with color, right?
And if
I knew that it was changing, right? That there were some changes that came about in Safari. Basically, they started handling all the CSS color definitions with color management.
And they were the only ones at the time.
Yeah, and it was basically causing color matches between Chrome and Safari. And it's like, well, where are those coming from? And then, you know, down the rabbit hole I went and, you know, realized that what they were doing was sort of a compatibility mode for color, because they were coming out with these, you know, higher precision displays that are now on the iPhone, the iPad, and the latest MacBooks. It's called thing called Display P3, right? It can display more color than a traditional sRGB monitor. And the problem is that all the web standards are defined in terms of sRGB. So they had to have all their CSS render in sRGB, even though it's on a display that can display more colors than our sRGB.
Do you feel like you're in a weird, you're like in a science fiction program where you're simultaneously in the past and the future? So as is just an example, Adobe is converting stuff to sRGB by default because that's the W3C standard color space that everyone's supposed to be supporting. But the technology has moved forward so much that you don't want to do that, and you don't want to convert. So a lot of things that, if you have a little knowledge, seem like a good idea. Oh, well, Adobe does this by default and seems like a good idea. Of course, let's use sRGB. That's the standard, isn't it?
And if it's interesting that one of the things that happened recently was the Google Pixel. There were a lot of side by side comparisons. You know, iPhone 7 versus Google Pixel. You know, screenshot galleries, right? And everything had been converted to sRGB, which kind of took away 25% of the color that the iPhone 7 could display, just because that's kind of Adobe's default settings, right? And all these web designers that are doing the screenshots for the content management systems and everything, it's just kind of, it just assumes that everything's sRGB,
right?
Which,
and
which is no longer a good assumption, right?
You're being compared on a standard that makes your less qualified competitor look actually better, because they're better with the sRGB.
Right.
And you're being viewed at, yeah.
It's funny. Apple even has this problem, right? They can't promote the vibrant colors of their new their iPhone 7 or their iPads or whatever on the web, because the majority of screens are still sRGB.
Sure.
In their keynotes, right? They use those projection screens. Those are sRGB. So, you know, even on, you know, they're presenting this stuff in front of a live audience, they can't show the wider gamut. You can really only see it when you hold the device in your hand. And then it's, at least to me, it's pretty clear that it's a much wider range of color. You know, your reds and your oranges really start to pop out a lot more.
Well, I give presentations, you give presentations, even with the best equipment and the best producers, the color range on a projection is not going to be nearly as rich.
Right. Right.
Is it unfeasible to think of Apple or someone making gigantic monitors that would, you know, that would be as viewable from the back of the room as a screen, but would have all the? Is that just ludicrous? What I'm saying, because of
maybe like something like that would happen. You know, you've got those like at the stadiums and stuff. That's the Diamond Vision. Right, you know, it's basically instead of projecting something, they, you know, light up little individual pixels on the display. As far as, you know, display technology is just getting better across the board, right? TVs have better color, right? Our computers have better color. And in fact, that was actually one of the motivations for Apple, you know, coming out with these new display P3s, it's a competitive advantage for them, right? They can say our screens have 25% more color than the Android phones, right?
Because also watching video on them.
Yeah.
Because more and more, that's what people are doing.
Well, it's all sorts of content, right? And that the thing that's important too, from a web developer's point of view, from an app developer's point of view, is that you're going to encounter a lot more content now with this wider color, right? Everybody who's got an iPhone 7 is taking pictures with a wider gamut now. And, you know, if you put that in Dropbox, it's going to lose some of the color. If you put it in
Photos, converts when people transfer.
If you upload it to Twitter, it keeps it. If you upload it to Instagram, it keeps it. But
keep
copies of it. It's a more complicated situation now.
So right? you're trying to make super high res images for a website for those people who have high res screens and, as if you could possibly tell, have fast connections. You're doing that, and so the gamut.
It's like in the days, you know, when we went from 256 colors to a million colors.
But then,
right?
when
all
Facebook,
of a sudden things got better.
But when there's a card, right, at Twitter, or when Facebook grabs a screen grab of it to show it, it turns to crap again, right? Or if you upload it to Instagram. I love Instagram, but you're basically losing a lot of the image quality.
Yeah, not anymore, though.
Instagram
has made a bunch of changes to maintain the quality.
Since when?
In their last version. In fact, they actually posted something on their developer blog.
Oh, just like a couple days ago?
Yeah. In fact, one of the early drafts of the book was, I'd sent it to... Mike Krieger, who's the CTO over at Instagram, and because I knew, you know, it was pretty clear to me that the iPhone 7 was going to be coming out, and it was probably going to have this wider screen, you know, wider gamut screen, and you know, Apple likes to have somebody to talk about during the keynote, so I sent him an early draft of the book, and he was like, "Wow, this is great!" And they used a lot of the information that I had in the book to
Instagram's
work on this new version of Instagram.
So yeah. Instagram's better because they read an early draft of your book, is what you're saying,
right? Yeah.
Basically. So that's amazing. So
yeah.
Really, we
yeah.
could say Instagram's better because of me then, because I co-founded the company that published your book. So therefore. Credit where it's due, my friend. No, that's fantastic. You also went through
some. There's some truth in that, right?
But
I sent it that really, really early draft to you and Ethan.
We were dropping dead.
Supportive. Yeah, you were very supportive of it. So,
well, you're one of the most knowledgeable people. I mean, I always feel like one of my jobs as a designer has been to translate what the much smarter and more knowledgeable people that I'm fortunate enough to know are saying. So I'll like hear you say something and go, and I'm able to explain to someone else, here's why that's important. And here's, or I'm just able to go, here's Craig. He'll explain, which is,
yeah, well, you know, and I have a tendency to get into the minutia, and that's, you know, the editors at A Book Apart are awesome. Right.
Yes.
They really did. They pushed me hard to make things simpler, to make a really complex topic understandable.
Well,
right? There's a lot of work to pull out the important bits and throw away the unimportant bits.
Our editors are great. Was there anybody in particular you enjoyed working with? You worked with
Tina Lee was awesome.
She's a fantastic editor. I tell everybody.
Yeah, she doesn't pull any punches.
You mean she thought?
Yeah, she's brutally honest.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what you need, right? And it's, you know, it's killing your babies, right? You know,
need. Else.
Yeah. I mean, you work for, you know, a day getting these three paragraphs that you think are just awesome.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she just rips them up and it's like, no, you don't really need that. And there's one little bit here. This one sentence I think you need to keep. You need to explain it more.
Another problem too. Yeah, she's right. But here's another problem that I know you had. Things changed. Like this book was basically written about 6 months in. You had basically written this book. And then Apple said, yeah, we're changing all the rules now. And you said, well, I got to rewrite the book. And we were like, well, it's such a good book and you've done so much work. We all have. Maybe just change a paragraph or say, hey, some stuff has changed. Here's a link to the web. And you're like, no, no, no. It's really, really, really changed. And
yeah. I thought that I could do just a, you know, minor editing pass on the content. And it's like, no, as soon as I started doing it, it's like, yeah, this is going to need this, you know, this changes everything. And it, in the end, it was good because that period of time, you know, the dust kind of settled a little bit on the web standards. In fact, the WebKit team started talking more about what they were doing. Apple had WWDC and introduced and, you know, documented all of this new stuff. So it's been, it was good that it, well, it was basically, it took 2 years to write this book.
Yes.
You know, and
what else were you doing
as well? What else?
What else were you able to do during that time?
Oh, we, you know, did our normal release of apps and, you know, just keeping things on the website up to date and that kind of stuff. So it was not like I was just sitting there, you know, cranking away at words for 2 years. But, you know, a lot of it was, you know, investigating stuff that was brand new. The, you know, all of the stuff that they had released for WebKit and Safari. I had to test that out, you know, build, you know. So, you know, I'm probably the first person who wrote any JavaScript to do a media query for the color gamut on a display.
Hold that thought. We're going to hear all about you being the first person to write JavaScript for the, you know, but first, I have to thank one of our sponsors. Can I do that?
You certainly can.
Thank you, Craig. Yeah, hold the thought. It's JavaScript. We're coming right back to it. Okay, we're going to talk about, so the new year's upon us, right? And you're ready to make 2017 your breakout year. I know I am. Well, our friends at FreshBooks want in. FreshBooks cloud accounting software is helping over 10 million self-employed professionals save tons of time and stress by changing the way they deal with their paperwork. Sorry. FreshBooks is rebuilt from the ground up. It's been completely redesigned from the ground up and custom built for the way you work. Get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, get paid quickly, which is my personal favorite. With the new projects feature, you can share files and messages with your clients, contractors, and employees. See how quickly things happen when all your conversations live in one place. And the new notification center is like your personal assistant. You'll always know what's changed in your business since you last logged in and what needs to be dealt with pronto, like overdue invoices, my least favorite thing. And there's lots more. Quick invoices, insights, multi-currency invoicing. Sorry, multi-currency invoicing. I said that like it was two different things. Multi-currency invoicing. No, multi-currency, it's hard to say. Multi-currency invoicing, right? So that's like billing in many money languages at once. That's pretty awesome. Live support with no attitude, right? Available all the time. Automated late payment reminders and much, much more. To claim your month-long unrestricted free trial, go to freshbooks.com/bigwebshow and enter Big Web Show, three words, Big Web Show, in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/bigwebshow. And when they ask, how did you hear about us? Say, Big Web Show. Everyone will know what that means, and you will get a month-long unrestricted free trial of FreshBooks. So check it out, support the show, support yourself, bill better, bill faster, get paid faster, enjoy FreshBooks. And now we're back with Craig Hockenberry, who is talking about the first color gamut media query, I believe.
Yeah, basically the guys at WebKit, on the WebKit team added, you know, we're all familiar with responsive design, right? If you're not doing responsive design these days, you kind of, what the heck? Right. And we're all familiar with media queries. Well, the thing that they've done is that, you know, they're people are doing media queries now to, for example, to determine the resolution of a screen, right? You know, it's like you want to display a different graphic if it's 2x versus 1x, you know, that kind of, you know, to know a little bit about the screen that you're running on. And now the same thing is possible with the color gamut. You know, you can know if you're running on an sRGB screen and display one image, or on a wider gamut screen and display another image. And that gives you a lot of great possibilities as far as, you know,
such as
things like, oh, product photography. You know, if you're selling something on the web and you're using sRGB for your product shots, they're going to look a lot better if you use a wider gamut, like, you know, Profoto or Display RGB. You know, your the images that you use to promote your products are just going to look a lot better.
And they'll change depending on the browser and the screen resolution and the gamut supported by the operating system. Is that all correct?
By the screen, it's screen relative. So if you're looking
how does the screen? I know how an operating system says this is how many pixels per inch we support, but how does a screen tell you and your server anything?
Yeah, the thing is that your screen has a thing called a color profile. It's like the thing that you were talking about with the camera that has a colorimeter to determine the range of colors that it can display. Well, every display has a range of colors that it can display. And that operating system knows about that color profile for that display. And what's happening in WebKit now is WebKit's querying that screen that's connected to your Mac and says, how many colors can you display? Are you a wide gamut or are you not a wide gamut? And then returns that information to the website that's running the JavaScript or, you know, displaying the CSS.
And says, swap this image for that image?
Yeah, exactly. It's like...
not swap this profile for that profile. It's not where you have one photo with multiple profiles.
No.
Because that would be efficient.
You could. It's like if you had a two separate images. You know, one at 1x for low resolution, and one at 2x for a retina screen. You could you can make a media query to say, okay, let's get the 1x one or let's get the 2x one. You could have a second version of that image. You know, that was sRGB, and another version that was display P3, for example. And, it lets you tailor the image to the actual display that the person is viewing it on, right? That's the goal, is to make the image that you serve up in the browser look as good as it can for the given screen, right? If you're working on a screen that has low resolution, you're better to give the person a low resolution image that will take less time to download and all sorts of things. if you had a site where you're doing product photography, and you would have potentially twice as many assets, but if you're selling $5,000 watches, right? And people are making decisions based upon how good something looks in their web browser, right? They're not necessarily going to a showroom to see this anymore,
right? People are buying cars and watches, expensive all watches, sorts, jewelry. They're buying wedding rings.
Yeah. And we've all encountered the crappy product shots on a website, right? And you kind of subconsciously make decisions about whether that website is good or not, or whether that vendor has their act together or not by how their product shots. I mean, this is the classic one, right? You click on the zoom button to get a zoomed version of the image, and it just shows you the same image in a pop-up, and it's not any easier. That happens all the time.
In that web development. It's weird, because as you're talking, part of me is going, oh, I missed the simple. I know you remember. We worked on a website together. back in the '90s. I know you remember how simple there was, like one version of every. So I missed the simplicity, and yet at the same time, if my job is to help my client who makes cameras, right, sell the beauty of their camera to a discerning purchaser, then the fact that I have all these options is great.
Yeah, exactly. You're probably not going to spend time, you know, doing two version of your vacation shots that you upload to Flickr or something like that, right? It's there's no point in it. But, and, you know, a lot of the UI graphics that we use are going to remain in sRGB just because your CSS is in sRGB. So that's kind of the space you want to work in.
Or you're doing SVG, which is currently in sRGB.
Yeah. Well, and again, SVG is they're working on adding color profiles to SVG, so you can get a wider color gamut for that.
I read that in your book.
Yeah,
but they haven't done it yet.
No, that's where it's going. It's pretty clear that the web standards bodies are moving towards, you know, wider color because they can see where things are heading, and it's all about, you know, displays. You know, with a Retina display, your eye can't see any more pixels, right? We've kind of reached the limit of, you know, you can't see pixels on the screen anymore.
Right.
So the only way to make displays better is to, instead of making them denser, making them deeper, right? Making them able to display more colors. And that's going to happen for TVs. In fact, there's a thing called Rec 2020, which is coming along for the ultra-high definition 4K and 5K screens. You know, there's Display P3, which, you know, is happening on Apple now. And you know it's going to happen on Android because they're going to want to compete with Apple.
But right now they don't, right? Right now Android has no color management at all.
They have got no color management. And that's, as a web developer, that's one of your challenges, right? It's like, okay, how do I make things look great on iOS where, you know, I've got a lot of customers on iOS, but I've also got a lot of customers on Android. How do I keep both of them happy? And there are strategies that I talk about in the book for doing that. And you're going to want to do that, you know, because it's all about backward compatibility, right?
It's almost like, but imagine, okay, like, imagine, think about how Windows was 5 years ago. In all probability, when you were setting web fonts, even though they're supposed to be exactly the same, the way they're kerned and the crispness and whether they're the edge, you know, whether they have hard edges against the edge pixels or soft edges against the edge, you know what I'm talking about?
They're basically different underlying rendering engines for that.
And as a result, as a designer, in a perfect world, you might say, well, I'm using a Dell Sans for my Mac users, but actually the way that renders on Windows or the way that renders on Android, I'd rather give that platform a different font that'll render better there. And you can't do that. I mean, I suppose you could with platform sniffing, but I mean, that gets crazy, but you don't want to do that. But in a way, aren't we doing something? How is this different if you're giving 15 different versions of the asset? Are you just uploading one high gamut, high def image and then trusting the system to create the other versions and serve the correct version? I mean, that would be ideal.
That is one approach. And that's not your approach. You can do that on any platform that supports color management.
Okay.
But then there's Android, which does not. Okay. So
what do you do?
It's like you either have to, you know, if you want to do something that is forward thinking and, you know, using the most advanced display technologies and is backward compatible, yes, you're going to have two different versions of that asset. One is the, you know, the future forward looking asset, and the other one is the backward compatible, needs to work on Android asset.
So basically we can look at it as progressive enhancement, where you start with a baseline image that's pretty good.
Right.
Typical gamut. And then you say, now, if the operating system has a much more extensive gamut, then we're going to get this instead.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a form of progressive enhancement, right? You know, you We want every visitor to our websites to have a good experience, right? We're all conscientious about that, right? It's like you build the responsive framework, you get the basic website put together. In fact, that's what I'm working on today. It's just a new product website, and just kind of getting the structure of the site, getting all the colors to look right. And then you think, okay, how can I improve it for somebody who's got their, got JavaScript turned on? I can do some rotators and some stuff like that. They've got a wider gamut screen. Yeah, let's make the images look better.
But if you use that wide gamut image as a default, it's going to look terrible on an older device. Right? You show in the book, you have examples skies turning the wrong color.
Right. They get a little, they lose their... They lose their mojo.
Because the system, instead of recognizing the millions of subtle colors that are available, it goes, well, here's a color I can display instead. I'll use this one that I can display, which is orange when it's supposed to be fluffy cloud white or something.
What happens in that scenario is that the colors in the image have certain numeric values, right? And those numeric values are transformed using color management on browsers that have that capability. Safari on iOS, Safari on the Mac, Chrome on all platforms other than Android, right? The problem is on Android is that there's no color management. So you get
these Google color not values, talk to themselves?
And it says here these color values are these wide beautiful colors, and then Android goes no, I'm going to think I think this is sRGB.
But this reminds me of when part of Microsoft was making Word and Office and cranking out terrible HTML, and another part of Microsoft was making IE6, which when they first debuted it. We look back on it and go and snicker, IE6, but it was a very advanced browser at the time. It had it had spectacular standards compliance for its day.
And IE5 on the Mac was the same thing.
IE5 on the Mac was fantastic, and yet if you said, well, let's see what I'm going to take my Office application and generate some HTML, it would be the worst. And I was like, don't these people talk to each other, right? And so here's Google, right, in many ways... Settings, they just came out with a font that supports every language alive or dead in the world, every alphabet system that was ever known in the world.
Yeah.
Right? They worked with Adobe and some other vendors too. I believe with the parent company of fonts.com. I mean, they work with some really, it wasn't only Google, but here they are supporting these standards and here they are with Chrome. It's like most developers' favorite browser because of the incredible standard support. And then in their mobile platform, is it a cost reason, you think, that they don't?
I know that they're aware of the problem.
Maybe it's that the hardware, they don't have control over the hardware.
I know that they've committed to fixing it.
Maybe the Pixel will fix it because that's where they have control of the hardware.
You know, it's like reading somebody's mind, right? You can see that they understand the problem and they want to fix the problem, but engineering projects have schedule constraints, right?
Sure.
And they're not, they've got to work on one thing at a time. And maybe there's something that's a higher priority, like this font that you just talked about. Maybe that's a higher priority than implementing color management. And, that's their business, right? But the same thing happened with embedded color profiles. Safari was the first one that to actually be able to take an image with a color profile that's embedded and display it correctly on the desktop. And, Chrome was not able to do that for many years. And they eventually, got back to parity where, an image in Safari and an image in Chrome on your desktop looks the same. That's not the case on mobile devices right now, but eventually it will be. And when it is, you're not going to have that backwards compatible asset anymore. You'll be able to do one really awesome image for both iOS and Android, but you know, we're in a transitional stage right now. You got to think about the old and the new at the same time.
So there's probably going to be a second edition of this book. I hate to bring it to you.
Probably.
Yeah. Right. But you're going to have to at some point.
You know, but it's and I'll be happy to write that. And
yay, I've got you recording. Thousands of people can testify that you said that.
Yeah, can you bleep that part out?
Yeah, okay. There's so much more I want to talk about, too. I mean, obviously, all the materials in your book, people should go there. But you wrote the first Twitter app. I want to talk to you about that and your history of app writing, what Twitter, you know, your feelings about Twitter and the web and what these things have become. But first I have to thank a sponsor, so let me please do that. I want to thank Incapsula. Incapsula. As we all know, the web can be a dangerous place. Well, Incapsula is a cloud service that makes your website faster and safer. They have a worldwide network that inspects every packet that comes and goes from a website, blocking attacks against your site while delivering your content to your customers faster. And with a global network of 30 data centers and 3 terabits of bandwidth, Incapsula sits in between your servers and your customers, routing and filtering traffic. Attack traffic like scraping bots, denial of service attacks, stuff like that never makes it to your servers. Meanwhile, your content is cached and connections are optimized using their CDN content, which is delivered lightning fast. Incapsula's custom software and servers, plus their 24/7 operations team, keep it all running. They protect and accelerate over 4 million websites every single day, from individual bloggers all the way up to Fortune 500 companies. Because Incapsula is a division of Imperva, an experienced security company, you know your site is in safe hands. Now, every day, websites of all sizes are attacked. Criminals use giant botnets to scrape website content, try to break into databases, and bring sites down with denial-of-service attacks. On the performance side, customers are impatient, and sites that take even 3 seconds to load can turn off potential customers. If your site goes down or is unavailable, those consumers will go somewhere else. Incapsula solves all those problems. Incapsula is offering a special deal to Big Web Show listeners. Just visit incapsula.com/bigwebshow and enter the code BIGWEBSHOW, and you'll get 1 month free. That's 1 month free when you visit incapsula.com/bigwebshow, incapsula.com/bigwebshow, and use the code, all one word, BIGWEBSHOW. And I'm here with Craig Huckenberry, Mr. Furbo himself, creator of Furbo.org, author, dancer, singer, magician, gourmet, surfer in Laguna Beach, and writer of the first Twitter app, which is now, I guess, is it 10 years old now?
Yeah, the this week is its 10th anniversary. In fact, today, January 11th, 2007,
is Twitterific's.
It's an important thing. The release, I think, was on the 15th, but we were beta testing an early version of it, and we had just done the bird icon, you know, the little blue bird icon. We were the first app to use that, and we were, you know, we knew we need to have both a noun and a verb in the app for the posts that we were putting on Twitter, right? And at the time, nobody had any name for those things. They were just like, you know,
they weren't tweets yet.
Twitter, yeah. Well, the word tweet is 10 years old today. We did a beta version of the app, and this beta version had that new blue bird icon, and it was the first one that we had had that new icon. And one of our beta testers was an engineer at Twitter, a guy by the name of Blaine Cook.
And I know that name.
We had been calling them twits. It sounds terrible now, but we were calling menus in the apps, because we were really struggling with this name, but we had to use something. So we were like, post a twit, you know, show a timeline of your twits. It was just like, we knew it was a bad word. And the app version that went out with the blue bird on it, this guy Blaine Cook said, you know, why don't you call them tweets? I was like, oh, right. And, you know, today is the day that I checked in all the changes and went through all the menus and everything and renamed everything to call them tweets. And we
was
did
that a global was that a global search and replace, or was that a painstaking?
It was a little bit of a pain, yeah, because it was sprinkled all over the place. You know, since some of it was in the help file, some of it was in the menu resources, some of them were, you know, they were all over the place. But it was a last minute change to come up with the word tweet, and it totally stuck.
It sure did. Did you?
And it's a good name.
Now, the giving the bird more character. How did you guys come up with that strategy? You folks come up with that strategy.
David Lanham. You know, we had this thing. All we had is at that point was the name of the app, Twitterific. And I had, you know, one of my, as a software
developer. Who named it?
I came up with the name in the shower, right? It was like, you know, Twitter and Terrific. Let's just call it Twitterific. And again, that was the, you know, everybody liked the name initially. And, you know, that's always a good sign. But David came up with this blue bird icon. One of my strategies as a software developer when I'm working with, you know, talented designers is to check in assets that look terrible. I mean, there's no better way to motivate a designer.
Yes.
You know, just like check in an app with a really crappy icon. And, you know, they see it. It's like, oh man, I got to fix that.
Yeah. That's
so brilliant. David fixed it with the blue bird. And, you know, we all loved it. I mean, it had, you know, great feel to it. And we even did some sound assets, you know, of you know, when you posted a tweet, you know, he would chirp, you know, we were just having fun with it. And yeah, over the years, the bird's personality has changed a little bit, got a little bit more friendly.
Twitter, have they ever, to the extent that you can talk about it, have they ever surprised you by, because I know they changed their API in a big way at one point kind of messed up a lot of apps that were out there, including...
We have an interesting relationship with Twitter. I mean, we're a Twitter API user. You know, we were the first app on the Mac, we're the first app on iOS. So, you know, we've been building Twitter apps for a long time. But, you know, their direction right now is to have their own app.
Sure. And
it's their network, their business.
They bought something, right?
They bought Tweety, yeah, and they took Tweety as just a starting point. I mean, you look at the Twitter app now, and it doesn't look at all like Tweety.
It looks like their website.
Yeah.
They did the thing where everything becomes one thing.
Yeah. Twitter is actually a really good client of ours, too. So, you know, we've done all of the emoji that they use on their app, in their app and on their website. So, you know, we have a good relationship with them.
Let me ask you something. When I first, in 1996, when I first became aware of you folks, and you, I think when you started the Icon Factory website, you were just kind of kids having fun making these really cool pixel perfect icons, right?
It was a hobby turned.
It was a hobby
business.
Yeah. And at some point, you started. You know, Microsoft hired you guys to, before Vista. It was
it was Windows XP. We did all of the icons for
and BOS, right? Hired.
No, we didn't do work for BOS, but okay. We.
Next,
we love that style. I don't think we did anything for Next, but we were kind of at that point where Next was being bought by Apple, and you know that I can't talk about.
Okay, No.
Anybody who's worked with Apple knows.
No, you can't.
Yeah, it's just not.
You can tell a friend, but not in certainly not on a radio program.
Right.
Actually, you
right.
can't even tell the friend, but if you know.
Yeah.
Anyway. Silence. So now we have dead air as we both think of things we can't say.
Throw another bleep in there and we'll
be good. We'll be good. Here's what I wanted to get at, though. Now, one of my favorite destination sites back when those things existed for years was Icon Factory. I would go and just check out, and you guys, you would have the contest every year for other people to make icons and award, and some of those folks became your partners. And it was just a really fun community. You know where I'm going with this, right? And now when I go to your site in search of icons, I mean,
they're kind of hidden away.
They're not there at all. They're not there at all. And even your portfolio, it'll be like, if I go to your site now, they'll be like, we made the icons for this Fortune 500 company. And there's like maybe one part of a microphone or something, or
You know the problem there, Jeffrey, is that
secrecy.
People don't customize their computers anymore, right? They're you know, they back in the late 90s, early 2000s. I mean, there was, you know, you could change the window chrome, you could change, right. You know, even apps. Remember, talking about IE5, right? You could change the color of the app. You know, you could have match the color of your iMac, you know, candy red, candy blue. You know,
that was the first thing I did. You had a candy bar that you guys made, that was the first thing I did. I'd buy a new Mac. The first thing I would do would be like get all my icons because I hated the default. Because the default OS 10 icons at the beginning, if you remember, Steve Jobs said, "Suck the joy." We have people who can take 32x32 pixel and spend like Michelangelo and spend months rendering this incredible thing that has so much personality to it. But now that we have the ability to make three-dimensional looking realistic, let's make a disk drive icon that looks as exciting as a disk drive. It's as if you'd just gone into a CompUSA and said, "I want your cheapest disk drive, please." No, that one has a little bit of personality. Give me something with no flavor. Great, that'll become the default. Like everything was like, let's make this thing look three-dimensional, almost like a bad animation, like a computer animation for kids, really bad movie for kids.
Right, but you know, and you could still personalize some of this stuff on your Mac. You know, you can customize folders and you can customize your hard drive, but
kind of
most people don't do that anymore, right? It's not a common thing.
They beat it out of us. They beat the joy out of us, I think.
Well, and you know, part of it too is, you know, on iOS there's really no customization, right? You get what you get, and you can change the wallpaper, and that's kind of the extent of it. And you know, unless you jailbreak, and then you know the jailbreaking is kind of a pain in the butt to get that functionality. But
no, the wallpaper is it.
Yeah. So you know with the design trend towards, you know, flatter, more outliney kind of icons.
Pardon me while I yawn.
But you know that's what clients want these days, and that's, you know, that's there's something to be said for simplicity.
Absolutely, right? Simplicity, I was going to say that, and not decoration for its own sake, and not interference. I mean, one of the reasons we had to be so decorative was that everything was done with chrome. If you wanted something to go left, you had to push a button that went to the right, and if you wanted it to go to the left, you had to push a button. And once you start interacting with your fingers, there's a lot less of that stuff to make, and so the content comes front and center, and the interface basically falls away. It becomes invisible. I get that. I'm in favor of that. That's great. But it's just when you have to have icons and folders and all this stuff, there was so much. Oh my gosh. Well, we have to... is that stuff available anywhere?
Yeah, we still have it on our site. It, you know, you go to iconfactory.com/freeware. It's
really,
it's there. Yeah, it's still there.
But there's no link to that on the homepage.
There is. It's kind of hidden, and you know, we know we that's a problem. But yeah.
Hey, I know somebody that does website design.
Really? Yeah. Have you got any experience?
There he is. Oh, look at this. Yes, I remember this because this is the blog. Like, this is when you. Oh, this is when you did that. When you guys did a CSS layout.
Yeah, that was our first
and you
first
did it
at CSS, yeah.
And you did like an HTML5 animation of the factory with like the W3C working in it, or was that actually a Flash animation that you did ironically?
No, that was H.264 video. In fact, okay. You go to iconfactory.com/20years.
You got to put these links up, buddy.
Yeah, I know. We got a little bit of the problem is, you know, we've been in business for, this is this 20-year anniversary page, right? That shows 20 years of our business, and, you know, there's a lot of content we have to deal with here.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, all the animations and stuff are on that page.
This makes me want to cry. It's like looking at pictures of your child after they've gone off to college.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yeah. So this is. Yeah, I'm going to write down these URLs.
Yeah, you can. Well, you want to spend some time there. It's, you know, it's interesting.
Easter eggs.
Well, there might be, but you know, it's really an interesting, you know, look at the web from 1996 to 2017. You know, the different versions of the website. And you know, we always tried to use the latest web standards when we would design a site, and it really shows you how much the standards changed over that period of time.
Look, right? You've got your World of Copeland icons in your computer world. You can still what happens if you try to put these pixelated icons on a modern Mac OS folder?
Well, you actually have to have some CSS that says. It tells the image. You're talking about on putting these Copeland icons on the web, or are you talking about putting them on your desktop?
I'm talking about on the desktop. So if I go to iconfactory.com/freeware and I'm on page, let's say page 36 of your backlog of thousands of icons that you gave away free over the years.
You have to be careful of the size, right? Because if it's a multiple of 32, you're probably okay. But you know, if you make a 32x32 pixel icon 48x48 on your desktop, it's going to get blurry.
Well, yeah, so. Also, it downloads as a download.dmg.
Yeah, yeah, the old disk image format.
I don't even want to.
Yeah.
I'm doing it right now, so if our podcast gets interrupted, you'll know why. Yeah,
exactly.
Oh my goodness!
It's one of those Russian viruses. You know, you're gonna have to send me 20 Bitcoin now.
I don't think it was the Russians. Sorry. Oh boy. Yeah. I'm gonna. Oh my gosh.
There's all sorts of fun stuff on there, but you know that's. In some ways that, you know, that's the past, right? That's part of our history. You know, we're still, you know, as a company looking forward and thinking about what's coming next. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book on color, right? It's obvious to me that that's where we're headed and something that we need to think about now, you know, before it becomes a problem in, you know, the next couple of years.
The book is called Making Sense of Color Management. I always have a pause because I had a different title for it in my head.
Had a couple of titles in it too.
Yeah, and in my head, I still think of my title first, the way you do. I always have to pause. The author is Craig Hockenberry of Icon Factory and so much more. Craig, before you go, will you... I just want you to stare into my eyes meaningfully while I give our last sponsor a shout-out.
I'm doing that. I'm looking at your little pixelated eyes right now.
All right. Wix.com is the last sponsor we must thank today. Jumpstart 2017 with a stunning new website created by you. With Wix.com, you can create yours all by yourself. It's easy. Just use the drag-and-drop editor to customize everything. Add your text, images, videos, and more. Wix makes it easy to get your stunning website looking exactly the way you want. No tech skills needed. Ironic, considering what we've been talking about all day. No tech skills needed. Plus, your site is mobile-optimized, so you'll look amazing on any device. Whatever you need a website for, Wix has you covered. The possibilities are endless, so start that blog or showcase your artistic talent in a beautiful portfolio. You can even grow your business with a stunning online store, or simply explore new ideas. Listen to this, Craig. This is kind of amazing. Over 97 million people choose Wix to create their website. 97 wow. million people. That's like, wow. those are like WordPress numbers. That's huge. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they must know something about what they're doing, I would guess. Make yours happen in 2017. It's easy and free. Just go to Wix.com, that's W-I-X.com, and create your stunning website today. Thank you, Wix.com. Thank you, Encapsula. Thank you, FreshBooks. Thank you, Craig Hockenberry, for 20 years of programming and thinking and just...
Having fun.
You are amazing. Are you coming
you are
to
as
New
York? Well.
Thank you. Are you going to be in New York anytime in the next year?
I would love to be. Yeah, it's been a while since we've been there, but yeah, who knows? It's we're kind of trying to figure out what this year holds for us right now.
As we all are.
As
we all, it's an interesting year. Interesting year.
Yeah. Hopefully, it's. A little better than the last one.
Yeah, I think everybody was bummed out last year, I would say. I would say without doubt. I don't think there's anyone who was happy last year. It was, well, so many people we all love died. That was a lot of it. And then our social fabric was almost torn apart because of, we're not going to do that because there's too much to talk about, and that's another show.
Yeah, stay positive.
We'll stay positive. We'll leave that for the John Grubers. No, I'm kidding. I like my joke. Okay. This is what you can hear by the lovely sirens that I'm in New York. You're in Laguna Beach. It's probably
it's
sunset over the sea right now there.
I was just going to say, it's kind of calm and peaceful here, so, yeah.
Out here we have, there's a team of homeless people rioting with some striking garbage workers. I'm just kidding. No, it's lovely here, too. There's just a lot of sirens. Okay. Those sirens tell you that the city's working.
Yep, that's situation normal.
Yeah, that's good. I by the way, we're around the corner from a hospital. That's probably what you hear. So
people's
lives are being saved, okay? So no more jokes about New York.
That's a good sound to hear then.
It is. It is a very good sound. Okay, and that's the sound of my cat. She's decided that she should be fed, and the way she lets me know that is by knocking everything off
my- My dog just came in the office and gave me the stare down like, hey, it's lunchtime, Daddy.
Yeah, it's like, you guys have been talking for an hour. It's my time now.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much. It's been great. And let's do this again soon. And thank you. The book is Making Sense of Color Management. The man, the legend, Craig Hockenberry. Chockenberry on the Twitters. Thank you.
Yep. Talk to you soon.
Soon.